seal coating against Peterson. Mr. Richardson.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May I bring my water off with you?
Sure.
All right, great.
You can even bring your blankie up.
My what?
Your blankie. You can bring anything up.
You know, luckily I don't have a blankie, Your Honor. I don't think my clients would feel too comfortable with that. Thank you very much. It's an honor to appear before you. Let's start. I think the issue of publication has been taken off of the table. Based on the correction that was filed by, or the notice of correction that was filed by the appellees, we know some things now. We know that Blackout was debarred and their debarment was published on a website. We know the amended notice debar, which contains allegations that include collusion, concealment, and submitting false claims, or a false bid, I'm sorry, was put into appellant's file, and we now know that all it's going to take is a FOIA request for the amended notice to debar to be disclosed. We now know that, in fact, the CTA has disclosed the amended notice to debar and the debarment itself to third parties. And we know that that third party has now disclosed it to a fourth party, which is a municipality, where the appellants had bid on public work, and now that public work is not been awarded to them.
You know,
and, yes.
Forgive me, but the cases draw a distinction between occupational liberty and the right to a specific job. What I am trying to figure out here is in what sense did the CTA's actions cause the plaintiffs to lose the ability to perform asphalt work. I mean, it's not as if they lost a license to do this work. They simply temporarily lost the ability to bid for some government contracts. They could still perform all other available asphalt work, right?
Well, when you, I mean, we would say no. And we would, and I'll explain that. And when you look first at the cases that deal with debarment, going back from Gonzalez to Lawler, or to Larry, I'm sorry, to the D.C. appellate court cases, what you see is debarment is very, very serious because of the stigma that's attached to it. And on top of that, when you have debarment, which is essentially blacklisting, and on top of that, you have the disclosure of information about a contractor that they do things like conceal information, bid rig, submit false bids. It's terribly damaging. So the concept that after this debarment by the CTA.
I don't understand why that is significant. I assume being accused of being a notorious shoplifter is also damaging. But the Supreme Court held in Paul against Davis that that didn't affect the liberty or property interest.
Well,
your general argument, the government did something that was released information that was damaging, therefore there's a violation of the Due Process Clause. The Supreme Court's already rejected that.
Well, I think
you need to find some independent liberty or property interest.
The liberty interest falls under the stigma plus test, and the liberty interest is implicated.
I can't see any plus.
Any what?
Your attempt to do the plus is making this occupational liberty interest. But as Judge Rovner said, losing the ability to sell your services to one single buyer in the whole wide world for 1 year doesn't sound like a deprivation of occupational liberty.
I don't think that takes into account the way, with all due respect, the world works with respect to contractors. I mean, our clients, the core of our clients' business is public contracting. We allege that.
But there were multiple reasons given for the debarment, and it seems to me that the plaintiffs don't seem to contest all of them. And why wouldn't that be fatal to the claim? They seem to admit that they did not meet the standards for CTA contracts in several ways. For example, they didn't have the requisite concrete experience. They used subcontractors were not allowed, and so forth. So why isn't that fatal?
Well, it isn't fatal because they could have been fired for breach of contract. The barment is a stigmatizing thing.
But that'll be wiped out in a month.
I'm sorry, what was that?
In a month, it's going to be erased.
But you look at the Lawler case and the Leary case, and in the spirit of the baseball season, this court specifically says in Leary, after you've been debarred, next time, even when that debarment has ceased, when you go to apply for a public job, it's like going in with two strikes before you even step to the plate. I mean, it's just happened.
Well, it's no longer public. I mean, it's wherever they put it on their website or whatever, it's taken off.
But it's already been.
Where is it going to indicate after a month from now that's going to be? There's going to be a disbarment.
Well, third parties have it, Your Honor. I mean,
well, they have it, but it's old hat. What you hired your company hired somebody named Farrell, I believe, right?
Yes, they worked with an individual named Farrell,
and they were disbarred.
Farrell was disbarred.
Well, obviously, your company didn't know that. I guess I say obviously because didn't know. Yet that's supposed to be this black mark that just sticks out so much. Your company didn't even see it.
Right. Well, now I can't tell you for sure. I don't believe that they were published on the website before. I think that that's relatively recent. And on top of that, there wasn't a labor organization that had received these documents via FOIA request that was going to all these different, or at least one place, where our client bid on work. And, you know, these guys roll in with this notice of intent at the bar that says our client's engaged in collusion.
Well, this lawsuit, everybody's going to know it now.
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, our clients aren't telling people about it.
You are.
And you're asking the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit to issue an opinion that will shout it from the rafters to the world forever.
Understood.
That will be the result of this litigation.
Understood. And for an awful long time, our clients didn't bid on contracts. And if you read what I argued before the district court when we first came in, and I'm not saying it's the same now. We said we just want the debarment reversed. That's what we said before Judge Bucklow. At this point, they have been damaged. They have been damaged significantly. Okay. They are not going to be able to bid on contracts and get them, because if you had a choice of five contractors, Your Honors, to do your driveway, would you pick a contractor that had been suspended or debarred when you had four other choices?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, that's a great point, but you know, our clients still have to turn a profit on these bids. They can't bid so low that there's no profit.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
What process do you believe is due before a temporary debarment? Why is the ability to respond to charges in writing not adequate? In other words, what would the plaintiffs have accomplished at a full-blown hearing? And I don't mean generalities such as cross-examining witnesses. I mean specifically, what information could they have brought forward that they could not have presented in written materials?
They could have explained face-to-face to the hearing board that they did not collude, that they didn't know that Farrell was debarred. It would be an issue of credibility. Look, they were going to lose the contracts no matter what, because it's an at-will contract. So they weren't going to go in and say, okay, maybe they admit there were some things that they were doing that didn't live up to the contractual terms at that time. But the basis of the debarment, or to have a name-clearing hearing on things such as collusion, on things such as concealment, on things such as submitting false bids, they would have fought that. They would have made a record on that, Your Honor. They would have asked for there not to be a debarment.
Okay, these are really generalities. Who would have come in and said, you know, well, we are wonderful people, which is what you seem to be saying.
Not necessarily. Our clients would have come in. They might have brought Farrow in to say, listen, I never told these folks at all that I had been debarred. They didn't know I was debarred. I worked with the CTA, and they knew it. The CTA knew it, I mean. So how is it?
You really think he's going to add to his own problems?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, we would have compelled him to come in. You know, there's different things to say what we would have done during a hearing. We would have presented our case. And Larry says, in a very similar situation, to do this on writing alone smacks of judicial tyranny. Not judicial tyranny, smacks of administrative tyranny. So giving our clients the opportunity to respond in writing without having any sort of hearing to clear their name is inappropriate. It's unconstitutional.
Is that akin to all of the courts in the country, including ours, which take cases without argument? I mean, is that some sort of judicial tyranny?
No.
Are we tyrants? Look at us.
I can assure you, you are not tyrants. At least, I hope not. This is a debarment. This is something that is going to stigmatize the plaintiffs.
Do you know
and,
the plaintiffs?
If I could just add, Your Honor.
I'm sorry.
You know, really quickly, if you look at all the cases throughout the country, every case says that a debarment is serious. Every case, the only case that holds that a debarment does not implicate a liberty interest is Chicago United 2. And that debarment lasted 7 days and was reversed. And those folks' contracts were reinstated. So you go to the Sixth Circuit, you go to the Second Circuit, you go to D.C., 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 case after case after case, you go to Lawler. Larry, I keep calling it the wrong name now. I apologize for that. And they say over and over again, you're debarred from doing federal work for 3 years. It's going to stigmatize you. And your liberty interest has been implicated. Now, whether processes do is something we would get to in discovery, I presume.
The plaintiffs didn't take advantage of the judicial review that was available in state court. How do we treat that failure to exhaust the state law remedies?
Yeah, this is a federal case, and we want our due process heard in a federal court. The debarment proceedings, can I ask a quick question? This light, does this mean I have 1 minute left in my regular argument or in rebuttal as well?
No, in rebuttal.
In rebuttal as well.
Yeah.
You get notices from the clerk's office about this.
Yes, I got it. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for like 30 seconds of rebuttal, okay, which I may have left. Okay? Thank you so much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Joel Bertocchi, and I represent the defendants. Let me first say that I regret the fact that we had to make some corrections in our brief. There was a miscommunication between client and lawyer. I'm sorry about that. We have corrected it. I do not believe that the issue of publication, is off the table. There are just a few general points I want to emphasize that go to a lot of Mr. Richardson's arguments. The first is that the reasons that Blackout and the Colonex were actually debarred is considerably narrower than what Mr. Richardson suggests, and considerably narrower than what is in the notice. The notice lists 7 grounds. But the recommendation to the debarment committee, which they accepted, was to debar them on 2 grounds. Mr. Richardson wanted a hearing to address collusion, but his client wasn't debarred for collusion. His client was debarred on grounds that they essentially conceded. They conceded they were not concrete contractors. They conceded they did not have concrete workers working for them. They conceded that they gave the bulk of the contract away to somebody. They say they didn't know he was debarred. Maybe that's true, maybe that's not, but it doesn't matter. CTA is entitled to know who they were contracting with and who is bidding and going to do the work that is being bid on. So the reasons for debarment were actually substantially narrower. With respect to Judge Rovner's initial questions about whether Blackout can work, we have no reason to believe they can't get private work. They never addressed that in the district court. They never addressed it in their briefs, and it wasn't addressed today. There are just as many blacktop parking lots around shopping malls as there are around government buildings. They say that their core of their work is...
I think there are a lot more shopping malls than there are governmental buildings.
You know, I spend a lot of time in government buildings, Your Honor. I guess maybe that's
why... And government's getting bigger, right? That's what you're
and they're
saying.
Bigger.
Yeah.
They're much bigger. There's a lot of blacktop out there that private parties will pay to get done. The plaintiffs say that their core is government work, but blacktop is blacktop and money is money, and there is no occupational liberty right to be exclusively a government contractor.
I have a completely different question, and it's this. In what sense is the committee that made the department decision a neutral tribunal? And in what sense did the committee, exercise any independent judgment? Because it looks like they simply adopted a position that was advocated by one of their own employees.
They ratified. They accepted that position, just as I'm hoping you'll accept mine. But because you're not a tyrant, Your Honor. But they are. I guess if I understand your question, I think the answer to it is that they're not independent of the CTA, but they were high-level policymakers in the CTA, all of the committee members. They were above the person who made the recommendation, so they were not beholden to her and required to follow her recommendation. There are cases, including I think some that Mr. Richardson cited, where they talk about, you know, if you have low-level employees who just work for the agency and don't have policymaking responsibility, that's not really an adjudicative tribunal. But putting the top three people in the agency in charge of these decisions is creating a legitimate adjudicative function. Now, I want to Mr. Richardson talked about the Larry case a lot. Larry is a federal debarment case, and there are businesses that only do federal work because they only do the kind of work that the federal government wants. And being federally debarred takes you away from being hired from a fairly significant government actor, although, again, it may not demonstrate, if it were blacktop, it still may not demonstrate that they can't get that kind of work. The Loudermill case, though, talks about when you get hearings or whether they're required, and makes it quite clear that written response is quite adequate in a number of circumstances. There was no need, as I say, to have a hearing in order to explain grounds on which they were not debarred. If there's nothing further from the court, I'll yield back the remainder of my time.
I have one question, because he said he would rather have been fired than debarred. It's an interesting distinction, but they'd been better off just to get fired, because then they couldn't debar them.
Well, Your Honor, I think that they were both, essentially, because the contracts, I think, are terminated as a result of the debarment, and so they don't have them anymore. But there's never been a suggestion that the CTA did not, under its own rules, have grounds to debar them based on the fact that they'd concealed the fact, not whether whoever Mr. Farrell was or whether they knew about him or not. They concealed the fact that they were not concrete people. Most of that contract was about concrete, and it's just not the same thing. So they got debarred. And I would emphasize, though, that they were only debarred for a year. My guess is that if they had actually been debarred for collusion, which would have amounted to fraud, it might have gone the full 3 years. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Richardson?
Very briefly, Your Honor. There's not a case in the nation that says when a public contractor is debarred that the ability to get private work renders that a non-substantial injury. There's no case that says that. The cases say to the contrary. The hearing itself, in terms of an independent body, the hearing was a sham. Our clients, the appellants, didn't even see what was presented to that hearing committee. They did not have the opportunity to look at the recommendation that was tendered. They didn't have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation that was tendered to the committee. They didn't have the opportunity to address the committee. There was no independence there whatsoever. There was no ability to talk to the committee. So it was a self-serving ratification with absolutely no due process.
Did your client have the capacity to do concrete?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Did your client have the capacity to do concrete?
Shortly after, the answer is yes. They thought, though, that working with Farrell was not a problem. The CTA knew that they were working with Farrell.
They had to have 3 years' experience with it, didn't they?
Did they? Yes. I mean, they could have done the concrete, and now they can do the concrete. They thought that they had a good business relationship. They didn't know Farrell was debarred. Farrell, we've alleged, was participating with the CTA on these contracts, so they were blindsided by it. And furthermore, they could have just been fired.
So they are doing concrete now, you say?
They have the ability to do concrete. I don't know what the extent of the concrete work that they're doing is.
Well, I guess I ask that simply because it means they're still doing something, but maybe not.
Well, certainly, Your Honor. I mean, they're trying to make a living. Yeah. Absolutely. But the core of their business was government contracting work, and just because there's a lot of public parking lots that are available, you know, bidding on public work, whether it's federal or state, is a specialty. There's folks who specialize in helping companies figure out how to bid and get state contracts. That's what my clients did. That's what Blackout does. And they can't do it now because no responsible municipality, if given a choice, is likely going to take the chance on a debarred contractor. They shouldn't be debarred, and that's really all that
I've
got.
Is this a very rare application?
There were three, in terms of debarment, mm-hmm. there at the time that our clients were debarred, there were them, the three of them, and one other person is listed as being debarred.
At the time they were debarred.
At the time that they were debarred.
In the past? Is there a record to show that those people never get a job again?
No. I mean, we haven't done discovery. I don't know. All I know is our client has gone to one, has been on one contract, went to one public hearing on that contract that they were going to get, and subsequently have not been awarded that contract.
And that's because all those contracts have that same language in it.
All of them, and all the procurement codes.
In 1 month, that they can say no. They're not debarred.
Yes, but the debarment will still be public record.
Well, they don't say were you ever debarred. They say are you debarred.
And you have to say there's many procurement codes that say over the 5-year period, you have to talk about whether or not you'd been debarred over that 5-year period.
Right.
I see my time is up.
All
Thank you so much, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.